Hello, and welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 36.
Hey there, and welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we're the Fanboys Who Strike Back. Each week we pick out some comics that we enjoy reading for the week, and then we go to our website, we write a review of what we thought was the best book of the week, and then we come here and we talk about that book and selected assortment of other titles. We do mainly stick with Marvel and DC. We throw in some independent books once in a while, just thought maybe I should warn people out there who weren't prepared for something like that. We do go into depth quite a bit about what happens in these books, and we like to discuss. We are fanboys. It's in the title. So there might be spoilers. There will be spoilers. I'll tell you what, there's no might. So with that, David had the book of the week this week, and with that, I wasn't that surprised.
I was very surprised, actually. The best book I read this week was X-Men Divided We Stand, number one. And like I said in my review, I do a pull list every week. I go through Marvel, DC, or Marvel.com, DC.com, Dark Horse, and I pick out what books I'm going to get. And X-Men Divided We Stand was the last book, and I was like, I'm not going to get this. It's probably some kind of one-shot, or has something to do with Messiah Complex, and it's just going to be worthless. So I didn't put it on my list, but when I got to my store, they already put it on my box, and it was somewhat lightly, so I'm like, okay, I'll just get it. This book was good! This book was really, really good.
If you're a big X-Men.
If you're an X-Men fan. So I definitely need to say that. If you're an X-Men fan, this book is really what you want. If you liked Messiah Complex, which I think the further we get away from Messiah Complex, the less people like it. This is also a really good book. What this book is a bunch of short stories with characters based on the aftermath of Messiah Complex. So we have the first story was basically a story of Cannonball and what he's doing now that Messiah Complex is over. And the main thing is, like, what are all these characters doing now that Scott Summers has, you know, disbanded the X-Men? And Cannonball's having a really hard time with everything. You see that he's going home to be with his sister and the rest of the Guthrie family, and he basically kind of walks into a bar, and he just starts a fight. Like, he's just itching for a fight. And he kind of meets up with these guys that have a problem with them. He takes them all out, and you can see that he's so, like, unfulfilled after it. And he finally takes off. And I didn't understand where that's going because, like I said a couple weeks ago, in the very end of Young X-Men number one, you find out that apparently Sam Guthrie is leading the new evil Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, which I'm not a big fan of. But I guess maybe this is where we can see where his progression is going. He's very upset that the fact that the school's gone and, like, all of a sudden he doesn't have a purpose in life. There's a lot of little short stories like this, but the best part of this story, which was just an emotional punch in the gut, was one of the stories about the new X-Men. His name is, I'm not sure if you pronounce it Anoli or Anoli, but he was one of the new X-Men, and he has, like, these lizard-like powers where he can regrow limbs, and he has the long tongue like Toad. And basically, after they got rid of the X-Men, they disbanded the school, all the students had to go home. And he's so happy, he's finally going home, he has somewhat learned how to control his powers, so he's having a normal life. And he's sitting there having breakfast with his parents, and his dad all of a sudden drops a coffee cup, and it shatters on the ground. And as soon as he hears it shatter, just with pure instinct, he jumps up and lashes out against his father. And you find out that, like, being a student at a Xavier school has screwed this kid up, which is something that you don't see ever, but it's so, like, that's the one thing that you, like, if I was a parent, I wouldn't want my kid going to Xavier school. Like, it's supposed to be a safe haven for mutants.
Well,
but the place is...
The kids don't know that it's... Or the parents don't know that it's, like, a mutant training facility, do they?
Well, some parents know that... Well, because after Grant Morrison's run, the X-Men came out publicly. Like, they were totally out in the open.
Okay.
And so, I'm not sure where that lies now, but a lot of people know that Xavier and the X-Men go hand in hand. And it was just, it was so well done, because we had Northstar, who was an old Alpha Flight member, an old X-Men member, he's going to talk to this kid and just be like, come back to Xavier's. And Nolly's like, why would I go back to Xavier's? Xavier's ruined my life. And it ends with him walking away, and then walking back up to Northstar, and then just elbowing him right in the nose, and then taking off, and just saying, don't follow me, leave me alone. And I just thought it was so realistic. It was amazing. Like, I was so caught off guard. And we had a story with Nightcrawler. We had another story with one of the new X-Men. And this was just, like I said in my review, this book should have come out, like, 2 months ago. It should have come out probably right after Messiah Complex. But it's just... This is something that's so important that, like, we have to see how Messiah Complex and such a big event and such a big deal is, like, something like disbanding the X-Men, how that relates to, you know, more characters than just Wolverine and Scott Summers. Because that's what the X-Men is all about. So this book was amazing, if you're an X-Men fan.
Well, no, I do think that definitely fills a niche, because you're right, there are more characters that have done, like, the core five or six, and it's nice to get that extra perspective. Like, I know for me, when I have a group title, especially a legacy title, and X-Men can be considered a legacy, even though characters aren't really replacing each other. You know, the students are being brought up to be teachers, and then, you know, more students brought in. There is a legacy aspect to it, and what I really enjoy is, you know, everyone within that circle, you know, if something major happens to someone, I love seeing how it affects the whole group, and I think especially in Titans, when, you know, whenever there's, like, a death in the group or something like that, it's always interesting to see how that person affected everyone's lives. And I think this is very much an X-Men equivalent to that.
Yeah.
Especially with the younger characters.
Yeah, this was really good for anyone who's a big fan of new X-Men. So I would not recommend this book to everyone, but if you are an X-Men fan, you should definitely go out and pick it up. I didn't want to get it, but it's really good, so definitely go back and pick it up.
I didn't want to get it. I like that.
I did it, but hey, I was proven wrong.
Well, yeah, it's not like it's a big chore to twist your arm to buy an X-Men book.
That's a good point.
If it was my choice this week, I would have had to go with Robin 173.
Oh, surprise, surprise, a Robin book.
Well, hey, you know, like you call him like you see him, and this was phenomenal. Chuck Dixon's story.
This is the spoiler stuff?
Yeah. And we're getting more and more into that storyline. There's one vigilante out there who's kind of stealing from mobsters and things like this, and she's a teenage girl wearing a purple outfit called Violet. And she'll give some of that money to charity, but she'll also skim off the top, too, and take a lot for herself. So Robin doesn't think it's worth Batman's time to track that down, so he's working on that. And then in the shadows, also, we've seen the spoiler kind of following Tim and kind of just checking on him and following him around and giving him leads on the case and things like that. But he doesn't know where she is. He's run into her a few times, but it's always very, very quick interactions, and he hasn't had time to digest that someone is out there running around in Stephanie Brown's costume. And in this issue, she actually confronts him, and she kind of jumps in to give him a hand in a fight, basically, and he just loses it, basically. He starts attacking her, and she's like, you know, Robin, this is, you know, it's not what you think. And he's like, don't you dare call me that. You haven't earned the right to come back. And, you know, is this funny to you, dressing up like someone who I loved? And basically just nails her up against a wall and starts, this was the best scene in the whole book for me, which it was just really, really emotionally charged. It was just, usually Tim Drake is just a very calm and collected character. He's not one to really give into his emotions a lot, and the sight of this happening really just kind of pushed him over the edge, and I thought that was just a great explosion of action and emotion in this book. But then the clincher for it, which anyone who's reading this book is wondering, is it Stephanie Brown? And there was a scene in the last issue where she pulled off her mask and said Tim's name from far away. It sure looks like Stephanie Brown. It's a young blonde teenager. But in this one, he basically pins her up against the wall, and he's like, who are you really? And he starts pulling off her mask, and she's like, Tim, don't, please, not like this. And that was the first time he found out that she knew who he was. And then, of course, something interrupts their little reunion, and they're left to fight bad guys. But, it was just that one scene was just so fantastic, and it just, Chuck Dixon gets Tim Drake, and I know I've said that over and over and over again, but Tim Drake, this is how I imagine what a teenage Peter Parker was like in the Marvel Universe, maybe in the 70s. I don't know, I didn't read a whole lot of the stories, but just the fact that he has friends and a social life that he has to balance with the Robin crime-fighting stuff. And in this, there's also a really nice scene with his old friend Ives, and we find out that Ives has been out of the book for a while, I think, since Chuck Dixon was writing it. And we find out that he's been gone because he had lymphoma cancer, and he's been getting treatments. And there's just a really nice scene where Tim goes over to his house and kind of checks to see how he's doing, and they get caught up, like, two old friends who haven't seen each other. And scenes like that juxtaposed against the crime fighting, the action, the intrigue of, you know, who is the new spoiler. It's just a really, really good superhero book. And Chris Bautista's pencils are really, really excellent. There's a fantastic scene that happens out in the rain where Tim is talking to some cops who are trying to not only work with Robin, but kind of take advantage of having Robin do some of their dirty work for him. And just with the rain coming down and the costume, and it looks great. I don't think I've ever seen Chris Bautista's pencils somewhere else, so I'm not sure what other work he's done, but man, he's doing astounding work on this book. And other than just a little bit of pacing issues, I'm eager to find out who Spoiler is. I'm hoping the storyline wraps up within one or two more issues, because I think
could it really be Stephanie? I mean, didn't she, like, die? Like, wasn't Bruce there when she died?
Yeah, and so, you know, we've seen worse comebacks. I mean, Jason got blown up, and he's back.
That's true.
So, I don't know what would be the cause for this. I can't imagine it would be
Stephanie. The fact that she knows it's Tim, that's got to be something.
Yeah,
I mean,
she looks like Stephanie, and she talks like she's Stephanie, which is just really, really weird. So,
it's a clone.
It's
or a scroll.
A scroll. Yeah, they're not kidding when they're saying they're going to invade everywhere. So just throw us off. But no, I'm loving this book again. Like I loved it back in the late or mid 90s when it was first coming out. Like, it is that good again, and it's just Nightwing's book waxes and wanes. And as a Robin fan, it's so nice to have this book again as like one of my favorite Batman books.
Okay, all right. Well, speaking of Skrulls, Captain Marvel number 5 of 5 came out this week, and we do indeed find out that Captain Marvel is a Skrull. Sounds like this was a weird one. So we know that there's Skrulls sleeper agents, and some Skrulls don't know they're Skrulls, and when they were conditioning the Skrull who was going to be acting like Captain Marvel, there was a mix-up, and now that Skrull can make a choice. It's weird. Basically, Captain Marvel is a Skrull and knows that he's a Skrull, but he's not going to follow the rest of the Skrulls.
So he's a Skrull acting like a Kree.
He knows he's not Captain Marvel physically, but he believes, like, in his essence and his memories and everything he knows is Captain Marvel. So to him, he is Mar-Vell, and that's who he's going to be.
It's kind of who's writing this book?
Brian Reed.
Okay. It's kind of an interesting take on you know, how bringing someone back from the dead, yes, and how to do it, especially with this whole overall thing. But, I mean, that's not
exactly what I was going to say.
It's not a terribly new idea. I mean, we've seen stories before where, you know, a clone is made or something like that, and does that clone feel like they are the real ones, or do they accept that they are clones? Or,
right,
or going back to the old silent film Metropolis, you know, do robots dream of electric sheep? I mean, the whole essence of souls, and, you know, is it your soul or is it your body? You know, what defines you? So,
yeah, what makes you you?
Yeah, and so that's actually a really interesting take on the situation.
Right, because when we first found out that Captain Marvel was back, we either thought it was going to be a clone or it's going to be time travel, and they said it was time travel, and now we know it's a Skrull. And I'll be honest, going in with a limited series, like, I've never been a huge fan of Captain Marvel, and I only read it because it was Brian Reed who was writing it, which I'm a big fan of his. After reading this miniseries, like, I would definitely pick up a Captain, you know, Marvel book, an ongoing, and that's not something I would have done, because, like, I think this was an excellent way of bringing back a character, but also, like, having that ongoing story now, where this is a Skrull, and what is that going to mean for this character? So, yeah, it was really good. You should check it out. You could probably still get the back issues, or, you know, there will be a trade-out soon, and I would imagine that there's going to be some kind of Captain Marvel ongoing series or something.
Well, he's going to...
If he makes it out of Secret Invasion.
Yeah, he's going to be all over that book, so... Well, we got more clones with Avengers The Initiative, number 11.
So, yeah, there was a lot of clones in this one.
This book finishes up the arc of MVP. One of the clones has gone bad. We talked about this last issue where he gained a weapon and was basically going through the entire Hammond camp, just annihilating everybody. He'd had kind of a mental issue, and the clone had gone bad. Clone done got bad.
So, never happens.
Yeah. These people never watch movies. They don't understand that things happen. So basically, it was really cool to see some of the characters that we've gotten to know from the entire run of the series so far really step up and take some responsibility. We saw them in issue one. This issue was great in the fact that this ties everything in from the first 11 issues all together. From the very first issue with the death of the original, what we thought was the real MVP, which ended up being a clone of another character who didn't want to do the superhero thing. He wanted to go off and live his own life. And basically, they had to go find him to kind of take his good memories again and insert him into the bad clone so they can kind of hit the reset switch, basically, was the whole thing. But it was really great to see how a lot of these kids, Komodo, Hardball, mm-hmm, they work as a team now. And, you know, yeah, they do care
Cloud
about...
Cloud Nine really steps up.
Cloud Nine was great in this book, and she's always been a really timid character. I think it's always a big payoff for me, especially when you see young heroes or young characters, and they grow into a position. It doesn't just change. And we talked about this a little bit last week with Kyle Rayner. This happened much more quickly in the course of 11 issues, but it was great to see Cloud Nine step up, and, you know, she did what she had to do, and they kind of said, you know, how did you know how to do that? She's, you know, that's what I've been trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you taught me that. So, I don't want to get into it if anyone's going to go back and read this, but there's some great action scenes, some surprising moments, I'd say, just with some of the small character moments, and a door left open, basically, which a piece of equipment falls to the hands of Slapstick, who kind of puts it away for later, and we know he's got a little bit of a dark side to him.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not a big fan of the character, but
I don't think anyone is, but he
might play more of a villainesque role in the future of this book.
Yeah, it was good. Again, Dan Slott wasn't kidding when you said that there was going to be a lot of action and a lot of death.
But, yeah.
I'm looking forward. I'm glad that the storyline was resolved, and like Eric said, like, I was surprised, like, how well it was resolved, and more than anything, the fact that this whole storyline was resolved around the cadets. It wasn't the teachers, it wasn't War... I mean, War Machine was in this book, and that was also a little tidbit. Like, we see that War Machine, his face is... he's like a cyborg, for some reason.
Something happened to him.
Yeah, I don't know, and I'm not sure if that happened in the Iron Man book, but I was like, whoa, what happened to Rhodey?
He's got a little Vader going on.
Yeah, but, It was the cadets who saved the day without any help, and, like, that was so cool to see. But I'm really excited to see how this is going to play into Secret Invasion, especially now that we know that Pym is a Skrull.
Yeah, that's... I know they had to wrap up this issue, but I'm really looking forward to... Even as I picked this up, I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to... If Pym's going to be in this at all. I'm guessing he's going to be in the next issue, because I'm sure they're going to have to address that in the Skrull on each team of the initiative.
Right.
So... very exciting. Captain America, number 37.
What a shock. This was good.
Yeah. The book just keeps on rolling. We're just going to, I guess, come out and say it. Sharon finds the Steve Rogers clone in Red Skull's hideout, and he kind of comes back and, he remembers his own name, but he doesn't recognize her. She kind of has a moment where you're not Steve, who are you, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It was a little creepy, I guess, when I got to that. I was like, oh, it's weird. But at the same time, and it's not that I don't like Steve Rogers, but I think reading this book, I had the feeling I don't want him back, or I don't want him back so soon, like give him a few years away or something like that, because I'm just so interested in the Bucky as Captain America.
But it's not Steve.
Well,
I'm loving this, because this is, I love it, first of all, because it's the Red Skull who's trying to make a clone, and he's just going to try to use it. And I'm just looking forward to this clone meeting Bucky.
Yeah, and that's teased in the upcoming issues, but at the same time, it just seems like this is, they're leaving the door wide open, like, oh, we'll just put Steve's memories or something into here. And that's fine. Like, I'm sure whatever they do, it's going to be great. And I'm not going to complain about it.
I mean, Steve Rogers is coming back one day, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a little bit sooner than I thought. And I guess it's just I don't want the story to end. I'm having such a good time on this ride. I don't want it to be over. So there was also a really good moment where Hawkeye shows up at Bucky's place and says, what the hell do you think you're doing? And it's kind of standard. They fight and throw some punches, but at the end, he's like, "Yep." There's this great moment where Bucky kind of catches his fist and is like, "Yeah, Steve taught me that move too." And you realize they've both been trained by the same guy. They both have a really big admiration for Steve Rogers, and that was also played off in the Fallen Son issue where they asked Hawkeye if he would replace Steve, and he turned it down.
It's good that they're establishing, like, Bucky and the Marvel Universe, giving him some character moments. I mean, there's some interaction with him and Hawkeye, and then he talks to Falcon next, and... See, I don't think that Steve Rogers is coming back anytime soon. Like, it seems like Brubaker is really grooming Bucky to be Captain America for a while. And maybe Steve Rogers will be back in some capacity, but I don't think he's gonna be Captain America anytime soon.
It would be weird to bring him back as a clone, even a bad clone.
See, I don't think that they would do, like, I don't think they're going to bring him back as a clone.
Well, they did.
But I don't think that's going to be Steve Rogers. Like, I don't think that, if anything, that's going to be, like, an adversary for Bucky or something Bucky's going to have to deal with, but I don't think that clone is going to be around.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm still really enjoying it. I'm going to enjoy it. It's just, there's some really interesting plot developments that are kicking up that I'm finding myself a little bittersweet as I read it, because I guess
the third act is here.
It's not developing in any way that I thought it was ever going to develop, which I love. But at the same time, I don't want it to be over, and this is my fault because I'm kind of writing the story in my head as I go along. Like, well, there he is. He's back, and that's I understand that's not how the story. Nothing's written yet, so...
Yeah.
I have to be patient.
So, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You like DC Comics, right?
I do.
You've liked DC Comics for a long time?
Yeah.
Countdown number 2 came out, and my theory upon hearing the whole countdown thing was that we're going to have a beginning, an end, there's going to be a climax, a conflict, and I'm pretty sure that's what we got in this issue, but I'm not sure if it mattered at all.
I guess it matters if you really like the story. I was mixed on this issue. There were moments where I thought it was totally absurd. There are moments that made me laugh because it was totally absurd. Literally, like, I opened up in the first, second page shows a giant Jimmy Olsen Godzilla, all Godzilla'd out. He's kind of a giant lizard boy fighting a giant Darkseid. And I'm wondering, and they're knocking down buildings and shit like that, and I'm wondering, when the hell did Darkseid get so big? And then, like, literally, I read the next page, and there's Kyle sitting there, when the hell did Darkseid get so big? I'm like, thank you, Kyle, I'm not the only one. Like,
And I love Donna's reaction. Donna's like, it doesn't matter, he's freaking Darkseid.
Yeah. There's two things that... Okay, well, I guess there's one thing that I had a little... I'm gonna complain about this factor is... Ever since Civil War, and even in Powers of It, now whenever I see superheroes battling and just ravaging a city, I can't help but think of, like, all the people in those buildings and things like that. Like, you know, like...
They're destroying, like, bridges and huge skyscrapers.
This is the most destructive, citywide destructive fight I think I've seen in a good long time. Jimmy Olsen
just part of that...
like, spans of bridge, huge bridge chunks and just nailing Darkseid with them and falling into mountain, or into skyscrapers and things like that.
Well, the best part of that is, again, Kyle Rayner, being the voice of reason, goes up to Superman, Clark, are we going to do something about this? And Clark's like, no. This is their fight.
I mean, I enjoy that they're at least giving Kyle those lines, like, okay, at least someone's here with me, like, you know, Kyle's just, you gotta imagine he's just sitting there like, what the hell is going on? But, actually, I really enjoyed the Orion Darkseid fight.
I was going to say, I like that too. I think Orion's a really cool character, and I liked him showing up, and I like him talking about, you know, how he is Darkseid's son and all that. I liked the interaction between the two of them. I didn't really like the fight.
Well, I felt like this maybe should have been, like, the big conclusion to Death of the New Gods, or like, I enjoyed this, but I think if I was reading Death of the New Gods, this would have paid off a lot more as the end of that story.
Well, plus, we know that Darkseid... I mean, this was supposed to end with Darkseid's death, but we know that Darkseid's a major player in Final Crisis.
Well, we don't know that now.
Well, we've seen the promos for that, though. Like, there's a promo that says Final Crisis, the day Evil won, and it's Darkseid.
It could be misinformation, but...
And you know, they're not going to kill Darkseid in Countdown.
Well, I know that whatever they do, Darkseid isn't going to stay dead. He looks pretty dead by the end of it. There's some charred ribs and bone and stuff like that with Orion walking away, which I love that whole scene. But, Darkseid, you can't kill him. He's Darkseid. So, he's probably maybe one of the biggest threats to the DCU, and it's not like the character has run its course or anything like that. So, I thought.
I'm just trying to figure out. Like, we're pretty much at the end of Countdown now.
Yeah.
I think the next issue is just going to be some wrapping it up and then making the way to Final Crisis. But what exactly happened in this story? The major thing was the virus, right?
The virus was big.
Karate Kid, the OMAC virus, the fact that we needed Ray Palmer.
Bad, and then her redemption, and then her just automatic switch back to being bad again. Jason Todd's journey, which he just up and... Again, is more of a realistic take on the characters in this book. It's almost like Jason saw what a disaster this was and like, I'm out!
This story's not going to bring me down.
He walked away. He threw the costume. I'm out. And then Kyle and Donna stick with it, and they're like, what the hell is going on here? Holly Robinson and Harley Quinn, they're out.
They're gone.
There was no real... you know, it doesn't feel like there was a big ending to their characters.
It didn't seem like there was a progression at all. It just seemed like you said, like, they did progress, and then all of a sudden, they, for the most part, they all got reverted back to the people they were at the beginning of the story.
Regressed right back again. It was a yo-yo effect, which was really jarring, I guess would be a good way to put it. You know, and there might be people out there who are really enjoying this series, and I'm not saying that, you know, there's no merit in it. You know, if that's your taste, that's your taste. And there were moments in Countdown that I liked, and
right.
You know, people out there might be enjoying this. It really wasn't what I was looking for as a follow up to 52.
Yeah, and I thought there was going to be a Challenger book after this, and that they're going to stick together, but that doesn't seem like it's the case.
No.
Which I guess I'm happy about, because I want Don and the Titans, and I want Kyle with the Corps.
Yeah. And again, like, I made that whole big, like, well, what are they going to do with Jason Todd if he's Red Robin? Like, why are they going to have a Robin and a Red Robin running around? It seems like they just kind of had fun with that idea, and then just, like, threw him back out there. So, I wouldn't be surprised if we just see him pop up again as Red Hood eventually, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I agree. I thought there'd be a Challenger's book. That doesn't look like it's going to pan out. I'm really curious to find out what's going to happen with Ray Palmer, because he's been integral to this storyline. I really grew to love him in Identity Crisis, but again,
right.
You have a legacy character now. I don't know if he's even aware. There's another Ryan Choi, I think, was a student of his, but another Adam running around out there.
That's
and,
true.
And so what are they going to do with him? Is he going to go away in Final Crisis? So, I don't know if this was necessary reading for Final Crisis. It almost seemed like this was just a filler for another yearly book, or weekly put-out book.
Yeah, this was not integral to Final Crisis.
Well, I think it was supposed... Well, it's a countdown to Final Crisis. One would think that it was integral. I think... aspects of it are going to play out, like the dark side thing, but...
I don't want to be negative, and again, if you like Countdown, you like Countdown, but 52 wasn't what it was supposed to be. Like, 52 was supposed to be the missing year, was it? 52 ended up being something different, something good, but it wasn't what it was meant to be. And so, it seemed like Countdown was kind of the same thing. Countdown was supposed to be leading straight into Final Crisis, and I guess it started becoming something of its own, but it just didn't pan out that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Final Crisis is 2 weeks away. I'm excited about the covers. The covers look really freaking cool.
Yeah.
Kind of retro.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it.
We'll see how that goes.
All right. Last on my list was Powers Annual number 1. Going back and revisiting a storyline, or a story thread that was done quite a while ago in the books, and basically it's that this was a very Unbreakable-esque type of story, but while Walker's always been kind of a good immortal, there's always been a bad immortal with the exact same powers. They both can't be killed or can't be hurt or anything like that, but they just live forever and they just persist, and just two opposite ends of the spectrum as far as, like, one's good and one's evil. And basically what this was, it was just kind of a throwback to that earlier storyline way back in the early history and one of their earlier confrontations. And it was good. It's not integral to the current storyline that's going on, and I was a little... When I saw Powers on the shelf, I was like, oh, yes! Because I'm so ready for that next issue, because the last one left me breathless. And this one, going back and revisiting something from a plotline a long time ago was an odd choice, because... if people missed that or have jumped on since they did the new format, I think this would really throw them for a loop. They'd be like, what the hell is this? But it was good. And again, Omen's art, you know, it's kind of funny because it is animated. And while we talked about last week how Ian Churchill gets a lot of flack for being very gratuitous, it's not like Omen's not gratuitous either. I mean, he loves to draw butts and boobies and abs and stuff like that, and it's albeit a different style. It's not quite so Britney
face.
Spears. Well, it's not quite so bubblegummy teenage look to it. This is a little bit darker, more stylized, and everything like that. But it's everywhere. I love it. I think his...
Yeah, maybe you need to... I'm going to say, maybe you need to start reevaluating the books that you read, because a lot of the books you read seem to have a lot of boobs and butts.
Well, that's superhero comics in general. But, his artwork... What I love about this is, like, him and Bendis have... a lot like what Bendis did with Ultimate Spider-Man, with him and...
Bagley.
They had that huge run. Bendis and Omen have been on this book forever, and it's their book, and...
Mm-hmm.
That art style is maintained. It's been consistent throughout the whole run. I can't imagine this book in any other type of pencils. It's great. And so, while I probably wouldn't recommend this to... this is similar to your X-Men pick. I wouldn't recommend this to the casual Powers reader if you're new to the series. If you have been reading it for a very long time, yeah, this is worth picking up. You know, it's a fun side story. It's not integral reading at all.
Oh. Well, I think that's it for this week's books. New York Comic Con has been going on, and there's been some good announcements, some weird announcements, and one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Eric, is that Midway just announced a new video game, Mortal Kombat versus the DC Universe. There's a trailer, and it shows Sub-Zero going after Batman. There's only been four confirmed characters so far: Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Batman, and Superman. But as a DC fanboy, what is your take on that?
You know, this is one of those things, like, I look at it and I'm like, okay, a lot of people are going to like this game. It's not something that I'm specifically excited for. Batman in a video game format for me, which would be the only reason why I really buy this. But Batman in a video game format has never historically been done well. And this isn't...
The Batman animated series game was good.
Yeah.
I thought so anyway.
Yeah, no, it was fun. That was good. Even the Batman Begins game was good. But they're not, like, groundbreaking. And they're...
Right.
Out of all of those Batman video games, you know, saying two... Okay, two were good. That's still pretty yeah. rough. You know, it's fine. You know, like, I think this is going to be a lot like Marvel versus Capcom. It's just...
No! Don't you dare say that, because that was one of my favorite games of all time.
Why not? What's the difference? I mean, it's just two franchises coming together as a fighting game.
I don't think this looks very good.
Well, you're not a Mortal Kombat or a DC fan.
Well, I'm a DC fan, and I'm a Mortal Kombat fan. I just think it's weird to pair these two together, especially because I still think of DC as being the more squeaky clean comic company. So them hooking up with Mortal Kombat, I was like, that's weird.
Well, you know what, maybe you should get that idea right out of your head.
Well, you know they're not going to have a game with fatalities and Superman in it. You know they're going to have to change that stuff, because you can't do that.
Well, the thing was, I watched the trailer, and there's a scene where Batman and Sub-Zero fight while falling, and they're punching each other.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Blood's coming out. You know, I mean, it looked pretty bloody. I mean, and all Mortal Kombat games are always really rough. But yeah, you do make a good point. It's like, you can't rip Superman's face off and, you know, do a fatality or something like that.
And I think and maybe that's where I'm coming from, where, like, I haven't really liked Mortal Kombat games in a while. I kind of got off that after Mortal Kombat 3. But I could still, like, if I went to an arcade and I saw a new Mortal Kombat game, I would play that. I would honestly have a problem playing as, like, my DC characters with a lot of blood. It would be the same if there was, like, my Marvel characters with a lot of blood. I just think that that's, like, too much. That's just... I think it's crossing a line a little bit. Like, I don't think comics need to be that violent. I don't think that's the kind of image that, you know, comics want to really convey and express.
Okay, well, that's fair.
That's just my opinion. I can be wrong.
Well, that's fair. I, you know, apparently someone at DC had to sign off on this. What it actually reminded me of was back in the 90s when you had, it wasn't so much with a lot of characters, but with Batman, they kept on doing these team-ups, like Batman Spawn, Spawn Batman,
yeah,
Batman Judge Dredd, Batman Predator, and That's what this reminded me of.
Like, and it could be good. Like, I'll be the first. Like, I will try it. I'll definitely rent it. I'll definitely check it out. I'm just, if anything else, I'm just shocked by it. Because they announced it, and I was like, what? I was like, is this an April Fool's joke? Wait, no. April Fool's passed. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're right, though, in the sense that, like, and I guess I didn't think about it, because on the trailer you see Batman fighting, and I think Batman fits into that world more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. But it would be odd to see Scorpion versus the Flash, or, Wonder Woman, or something like that.
I think a DC fighting game would be really cool, and even, like, Street Fighter versus DC would make sense, but Mortal Kombat and DC would just be weird.
It's true. I don't know how they're going to play up the whole violence aspect. I don't know if maybe they were required to downplay some of the fatalities and such. I can see there being blood, but I just can't see those, like, really, really gory fatalities.
Right.
I think, a couple of years ago, you rented a Mortal Kombat game, and I played it, and there was, like, a scene where one of the characters jabs Sai's into the opponent's kneecaps, and they walk around just spurting, and, I can't see that happening to Batman. You can't do that to Batman.
Wait, if that happens to Batman, maybe this is a game I want to play.
Batman beats everything, alright? Batman always wins. He's like Chuck Norris.
So then who wins between Batman and Chuck Norris?
Batman. Please. He is the default. He is...
He's the constant?
The constant, exactly. So, following that, we had a question addressed to us by Chris Malin, and it says, "Hey guys, what's your opinion on the current Ultimates run? I've been very disappointed in the whole book during this run, feeling as if the characterizations are off and that the book's direction is seriously diverting from the original vision that made this comic so successful and loved. My main beef is concerning Madura." How do you say that, David?
Madura,
okay. "I feel as if he mistakenly thinks he's drawing for regular Avengers. I hate Thor's new look and new hammer. I hate Iron Man's armor. I hate Hawkeye's cartoony costume. And I hate the color of Captain America's gloves and boots, red instead of the original brown. I'm with you, Chris. Someone remind Madura which universe he's drawing for. Thor is a completely different character, new accent and all. I just hate what those two jerks are doing with the run. I feel so frustrated when the creative teams come in on the book and have no respect or understanding of what that book is and what it took to get it to its current popularity. They then proceed to do whatever they feel like with no responsibility to remain true to the roots because they believe their own ideas are the only ones that matter. I feel that they're running that book into the ground and are setting up a need to retcon everything they're doing. Why can't writers and artists have more appreciation of an established property and focus on using that history to tell a great story versus what Loeb and Madura are doing by disregarding it and trying to create something entirely different? Well, in this case, duplicate the world this series was supposed to be radically different from." And, so basically, it goes on a little bit more, but you get the point.
Uh-huh. Chris sounds upset.
He does sound upset. I feel bad for Chris. But, Chris, know that you're not alone, because I dropped the book. That was my opinion, basically, on Ultimates 3, was I haven't followed the Ultimates as closely, but David gave me the trade of the first run, and I loved it. I thought that was maybe the best thing I'd ever read of anything Marvel. Yeah, I was going to say the Marvel Universe, but it's Marvel Ultimate Universe. But it was great. It was actually, that was the first time when I really grew to have a respect for Steve Rogers.
Right.
I first started really loving Tony Stark. I thought it was great. It was fantastic. Getting to the idea of what are these characters like if they existed in the modern day real world. I haven't read Ultimates 2. It's on my to buy list. But I did pick up the first issue of Ultimates 3, and while there were some interesting moments in it, I agree. I felt it was just too different. It was like watching a Joel Schumacher film right after a Tim Burton film almost. That's how I would describe it. It was odd and a little jarring.
Okay. Chris, he brings up a lot of good points. I think what I would have to say is I've always talked about how I'm a big fan of Madura. I don't think Madura is doing really anything wrong. I think Madura is a very high-profile artist who came back with a certain style. I think the big part of this is it's Jeff Lowe. Because while you can't have the... I don't think the art is going to make or break a book in this context, because you really do want something that's going to be a lot different than Miller and Hitch's book. And art especially. Because when I think of Ultimates, I'm going to think of Brian Hitch's art. And so you're going to want something to stand out alone. But in terms of writing, you're going to want something that's going to be more set in the world that Miller established. And Jeff Loeb is not doing that. And Chris is perfectly right when he's talking about, like, this is more... It's kind of like the Marvel Universe and a little dabs of Ultimate. And it just seems like Jeff Loeb doesn't have anything... he doesn't have a story that he's trying to tell. That's the whole thing that I've gotten. I don't even know where this is going. I'm not excited about it. The only reason I'm reading this is because of Joe Matt's art. And, like, I've discussed that a couple times. It just seems like Jeff Loeb was kind of... I don't know. It just seems like his heart's not in it. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I can't blame anyone for not... You know, for dropping the book or for letting it go. But, Chris, I agree with you. I'm still going to stick with it, and I'll see where it goes. But, yes, I am also disappointed.
I am really excited to see Jeff Loeb's Captain America White.
Yes, that will be... I'm sure that will be good. Yeah. And, I mean, Loeb did Fallen Sun, and that was wonderful. But well, it just seemed like his heart was in it.
We both liked it, but a lot of people
didn't like that. And I don't know... And, yeah, you know, whatever. That's your opinion, and that's cool. But I just felt like that... I felt like reading Fallen Sun, especially that last issue, like, you could see that, like, that was a story that Jeff Loeb really wanted to write, and, like, really... He felt something. But with this, it just seems like, this is wacky comics. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. There's a sub-question on here that I want to get to. It says, I just read through Fantastic Four with Brian Hitch, and I feel like the regular Marvel Universe is going to start looking like the Ultimates. I can forgive the facial drawings, that's just Hitch's style, but Hitch's Cap robot is way too similar to his robot designs on Ultimates. Does he have to make Fantastic Four look just like his work in Ultimates? I half expect next issue to feature Cap remove his helmet and have Ultimate Tony Stark make a guest appearance. I feel on something like this where you have an established artist and where you see that artist and you automatically think of a book that they write, and then writing a different, they go to a different continuity or they write something completely different. It's understandable to have a little bit of a mental block on trying to differentiate. It's like, yeah, it looks just like it. They're going to be related or things like that. Similar to how in the last episode we talked about Terry Morris Echo, and I said the art style, while because it's Terry Morris art, it's so strongly associated in my head as being Strangers in Paradise. While Echo is a completely different book, it's not related in any aspect or anything like that. It's just because of my own association in my head, whenever I look at it, I see Strangers in Paradise. And I have to get over that myself. I can't fault an artist just because of the way he draws or she draws, because I associate it with a certain book that they're very well known for. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I think that's what's going on here. I mean, Chris might have known Hitch just from the Ultimates, and Hitch does have a very unique style, and it's something that he does well, and something that's, you know, it's not going to change, but that's just what it is. I mean, when Jim Lee did his Superman run and his Batman run, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, that's how Jim Lee draws. It's just the artist. And, I mean, it can be jarring because there's the Ultimate Universe and the Marvel Universe, but overall, that's just the way Hitch's art looks, and it works.
Yeah,
in any universe, it's good.
I think the closest thing. Oh, another example for me would be Jim Lee drawing Batman in Hush, and Jim Lee drawing Batman in All Star Batman and Robin. Clearly, and at first, it was really hard to see Batman in that context doing the awful things that he was doing, like beating a child and, you know, killing police officers and criminals all the same and things like that, because I see that Batman and I'm thinking, well, this is the same Batman that I loved in Hush and that was such a great character in the main continuity. I had to eventually just get over the fact that they look similar, all the designs are exactly the same.
Right.
it's a different reality. I had to let that go. And the more and more I let Batman and Robin just be its own reality, the more and more fun I had with it, because it let me separate everything else away from it so that I could let it exist in its own little crazy Frank Miller bubble. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not faulting you at all, Chris, because I do the exact same thing.
I can understand that.
You know, you said the way they look the same. I think it's just because it's the same artist, and there is going to be some similarity in the designs and the looks, because they might not make new character models for every time they drive the character in a different continuity. But it's, you know,
good questions, Chris, that was, and good insight. Yes, you are correct in both of those things.
Yeah, so we really appreciate you writing in. Love to hear from the fans. And if you want to contact us and have your question read on the show, you can contact us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com. That is our email address. And if you have any questions, comments, things you'd like to see on the show, things like that, feel free to shoot us an email, and we'd love to hear from you. Also, you can go to our website at www.fanboystrikeback.com, and that is where we post the Book of the Week written review each week, along with movie review or movie trailers and comic news and things like that. We're just going to post stuff on there that we think you guys would be into and that you might like. So with that, you can also find us on iTunes.
Yep, iTunes, Podcast Alley. If you do like the show, please leave us a review. If you don't like the show, don't really need to leave us a review. You just don't listen in. But really, who wouldn't like our show?
We'll just say thank you for those who have left good reviews. We do really, really appreciate your listening.
Really appreciate it. It keeps us going.
It means a lot to us. If you don't like the show, if you have some comments, maybe not write a review, but maybe just email us.
Let us know what you'd like to see done better. Because really, that's the only thing we can do. Like, we love feedback. We want to know what you guys like to see more of, see less of. But just go ahead and choose an email.
Yeah, we're doing this for you guys, and you know, we hope you guys like it. So we just want to remind people, let's keep it constructive. So with that, yeah, iTunes, Podcast Alley.
Podcast Alley, any podcaster out there, come by the website, come over to the forums. You can talk about anything there. The books of the week, video games, we can talk about the new Mortal Kombat and DC Universe trailer, anything. And I think that was it this week. Dark Side of Jimmy Olsen. I'm just looking at this cover, the countdown number 2, and I still don't understand.
He turned into Killer Croc. He turned into a giant Killer Croc.
Oh, now it makes sense. Killer Croc. There we go.
I mean, that's the one who's creating the fifth world. Killer Croc is behind everything in the DC.
I threw a rock at him. It was a big rock.
Best line ever. Snower, you're losing Croc. Oh, I missed that show. All right. Well, we're going to go watch some Batman DVDs. So we will see you guys next week.